Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Senior Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Oh, well, thank you so much, Regina. And I, too, would like to welcome everyone to today's program for Caregivers, Practical Tips to Cope with a Loved One's Bladder Cancer. And this is part two of Living with Bladder Cancer. And today's program is done in collaboration with the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network. And you'll be hearing more about that wonderful resource during the program as well. Today's program is supported by Astellas US LLC and Segan, and I really want to thank them for their support of this program. Now, I just wanted to go over with everybody the details of this, some of the details of the program. First of all, we have over 200 participants on the call today. You come from all over the United States, from both urban, rural, suburban, and frontier communities. And we also have international participants from Canada, Colombia, Ghana, India, Peru, Portugal, and United Kingdom. So it's a global call as well. And it's a credit to each of you that you've chosen to spend this next hour with us. And now it is my great pleasure to introduce our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Anna Adriozola. And Dr. Adriozola is Advanced Practice Registered Nurse, Genitourinary Medical Oncology, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center. And Dr. Adriozola will be addressing updates on bladder cancer in the context of COVID, seasonal flu, and RSV, the important role of the caregiver in communicating with the healthcare team, helping to manage your loved one's treatment, including adherence and follow-up care, quality of life concerns and tips, and guidelines to prepare for telehealth, telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, and discussion of open notes. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Adriozola.
Hi, good afternoon, everyone. I'm happy to be here with you all today to talk about the very important role of caregivers and bladder cancer. So as some of you may know, bladder cancer really is a spectrum. You can have anywhere from superficial cancers to more advanced metastatic cancers, such as stage 4, each level requiring different forms of treatment. Superficial cancers usually need local therapies, meaning medications like instilled directly into the bladder, such as BCG, under the care of a urologist. More invasive bladder cancers, like those that are muscle invasion, lymph node involvement, or metastatic disease, require systemic therapies, meaning medications that get absorbed into the bloodstream and go everywhere. Depending on the intent of the treatment, there could also be possible surgeries or radiations, all of this done under the care of a medical oncologist and a urologist. That's latter part is the area that I generally work in. Wherever your loved one lands on the spectrum, taking precautions against infections such as flu, RSV, and COVID are very, very important, especially during this winter season. Your loved one's immune system is, you know, overwhelmed and busy trying to fight off the cancer, and many, many of the treatments we give can further suppress their immunity. And if they were to contract some of these viral infections, they might not bounce back as quickly just because they have cancer, they're undergoing treatment. And these infections and such can cause delays in treatment. Sometimes we have to wait like a week or 2 weeks before restarting to, let the patient kind of get over the infection they've contracted. Things like hand washing, trying to avoid sick contacts, and vaccines are really a key line of defense in protecting your loved ones. Luckily, we do have vaccinations against these viruses. We generally recommend if someone is willing and able to receive these vaccines to do so prior to starting treatment, or if it's an urgent need to start chemo or immunotherapy or whatnot, then maybe starting about four weeks or so after chemo is complete. Always discussing the appropriateness and timing with your treatment team of these vaccinations. There are three general categories for bladder cancer treatment. Your first one would be, will fall under your traditional chemos. Your second is immunotherapies, and third are targeted therapies. At times, we combine some of these treatments. A lot of these combinations that we're using to treat bladder cancer are really still under clinical trials, although just last month, the FDA did approve a combination of pembrolizumab and enfortumab. So pembrolizumab is an immunotherapy, and enfortumab is a targeted therapy, both of these in combination to treat locally advanced and metastatic bladder cancer. This approval really, really has shaken up the field. It's very much practice-changing. Since for many years, traditional chemotherapy was really the gold standard as the first-line treatment option for bladder cancer. So we're going to start seeing this combination of pembrolizumab and enfortumab out in the community a lot more often. Although with that being said, traditional chemo does have a place in many circumstances, especially in later lines. With more research and more data coming out of these combination trials, this may change, but for right now, traditional chemo is still very much used, but it's very exciting to see what this combination is doing to treat bladder cancer. Caregivers are our eyes and ears and play an extremely key role in getting a loved one through treatment. I think it's the most important, especially in the very beginning, when the patient, the family, and everybody's feeling very overwhelmed. Your loved one just got a cancer diagnosis. They're getting drug names thrown at them that are, you know, hard to pronounce, difficult to spell. Chemo timing and schedules can be so confusing. The list of side effects can be very long. There's frequent appointments, figuring out time off of work for patient, for family, for the caregiver, trying to figure out if someone is going to need short-term disability or FMLA paperwork, and just the uncertainty of it all can be very daunting and overwhelming. And I think this is where our caregivers really have the best role really in trying to get everybody on the same page and being able to move forward and not get too bogged down with all the details. I've unfortunately had some patients, you know, tell me how much of a burden they feel they've become on their family and friends, which is generally not the case. So reassurance on part of the caregiver to the patient is very important. You know, just letting them know that they're in this together, they're not here alone to kind of work through all of this that they've been kind of dealt. Caregivers can assist their loved ones in many, many ways. One way, I think, is just being prepared for the appointments that they're having, kind of having a goal for each of the visits. A goal can be as simple as, you know, we're here to get cleared for treatment, we feel well, to, you know, I'm having these symptoms, these side effects, you know, kind of describing what they are, asking if this is expected, if this is part of the process, could anything be done to alleviate any of these symptoms that you're having to make things more tolerable. And then seeking clarification on the overall plan or upcoming schedule and having one or two points of contact, you know, especially in where we have a lot of family members or a lot of friends that really want to help, you know, the person going through the cancer treatment. Sometimes having too many people asking for the same information can be confusing for the patient because, you know, everybody kind of takes something a little different from the conversation between the patient, the provider, and everybody. So having one or two points of contact between the provider, the caregiver, and the patient, I think sometimes clears things up a bit. COVID really has created a lot more opportunities for telehealth development, like video visits and telephone calls in order to receive and coordinate care. This can be somewhat limited if your oncological care happens across state lines. Things like licensure can become an issue. For example, if you live in one state but the provider you're getting care from is licensed in a different state, that virtual visit may not be necessarily legal, and this is not on you. This is more on due to where the person is licensed. Technically speaking, if you're licensed in Texas, you can't give medical advice to someone that lives in Michigan, for example. Usually this legality is figured out on the provider side before setting up a virtual visit, so you don't have to worry too much about that. And this is generally more of a problem within high volume centers where we see a lot of out of state patients, as an MD Anderson. Virtual visits can feel a little bit odd. It's something that providers had to get used to as well after COVID. Providers do get a whole lot of information just by looking at the patient and having them in front of you. The physical interaction between the patient, between the family member, friend, caregiver that's there with them, we can really gauge support or lack of support from those visits. But with that being said, virtual visits are very important. I think it has expanded our access to, help a lot more patients. Just as in-person visits, communication really is key. Having a list of questions or concerns ready for the visit, diary of side effects, an idea of what next steps are is always helpful. Generally, these video visits are conducted via the EHR system an office has in place, utilizing platforms such as Zoom or Microsoft Teams via smartphones or laptops. Usually instructions are sent out prior to the visits with ways to test connectivity, your microphone, your internet connection, video. All these things can be a little bit overwhelming, especially one if you don't have access to a smartphone or a laptop or computer, or you're not super tech savvy. So if that is the case, calling the provider's office and telling them, hey, this video is, I'm not going to be able to figure out this video visit. Could we make it a telephone call, or do I need to come in because I'm not going to be able to give you the information that I need to have answered or questions or whatnot via video visit? A few things I think that are very important for both caregivers and patients to really understand and ask during visits or just, your overall plan is, I'm just going to kind of list them out a bit. Number one is, what is the intent of the treatment? Are we talking about is this a curative intent? Usually reserved for localized disease, things confined to the bladder, or life prolongation? Are we talking about a metastatic state or stage four? Number two, what kind of treatment and for how long? For chemo, this generally has an end date, a very specific schedule. You get something every 2 or 3 weeks. You get about 4 to 6 cycles, so it lasts about 2 to 3 months. So it has a very distinct time frame of when you're going to be getting treatment. That's not the case so much for immunotherapy or targeted therapy. Both of these kinds of treatments can be given really for years and at times lifelong. It really depends on cancer response and tolerability over how long this is going to, how long we're going to be prescribing this for you. So kind of having an idea of time frame is, I think, very important. Number three, having a list of common symptoms, common side effects to the treatments that you're receiving and what you should be looking for. I always recommend patients and caregivers, really, because you're also the ones observing the patient. The patient might not be able to verbalize a change, is to write down the top 3 to 5 side effects per the treatment the patient will be receiving. When reporting a side effect, you always want to ask yourself two different questions is, how long have you been having this and how much of it have you been having? Really, these two questions help the provider gauge the severity of what you're feeling. It helps us really to be able to give you a recommendation of whether we can just continue monitoring. This is expected. It's, we're going to kind of move forward, or, hey, we need to change medications. We need to give you something to help alleviate the side effect. That is not normal. Or we need to hold the treatment or dose reduce the cancer treatment. Adherence to treatment is very, very important. Identifying side effects early and utilizing prophylactic medications like anti-nausea medicines, anti-diuretic diarrheals will help us stay the course. Help us stay the course in continuing treatment. Sometimes dose reductions are necessary, or even a complete change in the systemic therapy we're giving you can happen, and that's okay. We're always trying to think of risk versus benefits of what we're doing, and you know, having the conversation of side effects and how you're feeling is kind of informs this choice. Number four, having an updated medication list. Really, it's so important to know what medicines your loved one is taking. This includes, you know, prescription medications, includes over-the-counter medications, and includes supplements as well, vitamins and things like that. Some medications do need to be adjusted when you're getting some therapy, specifically diabetic and blood pressure medications. A lot of times when we're giving chemo, patients for some reason don't need as much blood pressure medicine, and so we end up running into issues of too low blood pressure, so we have to take off some blood pressure medicine. But this is why it's very important to know what you're taking on a daily basis, and asking if any of these over-the-counter medicines or supplements should be avoided while on treatments. A lot of these things, you know, we might not know how some supplements interact with the cancer treatment we're giving you, or could affect kidney function or liver function. So having an updated list of what you're taking is very, very important. And lastly, follow-up and surveillance. For those that have localized disease, meaning you've already gone through the ringer in terms of systemic therapy or localized therapy, possibly had surgery or radiation, and now you're told that you're cancer-free, surveillance is crucial. And sometimes we end up losing some patients to follow-up at this point. Surveillance visits can include scans like MRIs, PET scans, or CAT scans. You can have cystoscopies, lab work, urine studies. All of these are intended to identify recurrence early. If we're able to identify any recurrence very early, it really does improve outcomes down the line. For those that have metastatic disease, there are many, many visits, especially while on treatment, but it is very important to follow up with these visits. We're assessing tolerability of treatment and trying to avoid issues like kidney failure or severe toxicities with treatments. We often need to re-image you or re-scan. Sometimes we refer to it as restaging with CTs, MRIs, PET scans, and this is to assess the cancer response, and we generally do this every 12 weeks or 3 months to see if we can continue on the treatment that we've been giving you or if we need to change treatments because things have been growing. Cancer is a chronic disease. This requires constant monitoring and management. Adjusting to the new normal is truly, truly a group effort. I cannot express how much appreciation we have for all caregivers. This is just as much of a transition for you as it is for your loved one. So again, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Adriozola. That was an outstanding presentation, and you really set the stage for today's program. You covered a lot of issues that caregivers, of course, confront and deal with, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A, so thank you very much. Just a stellar presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is a doctor of public health, a master's degree in social work, and an RN. She's former Clinical Protocol Administration Manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in healthcare disparities, caregiving, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing stresses, challenges, and rewards of caregiving, managing family, friends, partners, and traditions in the context of COVID, seasonal flu, and RSV, coping with holidays, birthdays, anniversaries, and special occasions, long-distance caregivers, and remembering to take care of yourself, self-care, and stress management tips. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Hello to everyone, and Dr. Messner, thank you for the invitation to join this esteemed panel on caring for a loved one diagnosed with bladder cancer. Dr. Adriozola established a solid foundation for including caregivers in conversations about their loved one's care. She also provided a valuable update on bladder cancer and the use of telemedicine. It was very, very detailed and very comprehensive. I will follow her excellent presentation by focusing on the stresses and challenges and rewards that are usually associated with caregiving. Then I'll briefly talk about how to manage friends and family members during special occasions And I'll end up by sharing some tips for self-care and stress management, including for our long-distance caregivers. Whether the role occurs gradually or unexpectedly, providing care for a family member is a challenging job that can be overwhelming, as we heard. Particularly, though, for those who have to work, maintain a household, care for other family members, and at times even have their own health care needs. With thoughtful planning, a strong support system, and a realistic understanding of the role, family caregivers can give their loved ones the help they need without sacrificing their health. You know, nearly everyone becomes an unpaid caregiver at some point in life, and some individuals stay in this role over extended periods of time, which often last months and perhaps even years. And if we were to do a poll of all of our callers today to ask which ones are caregivers or have been caregivers, I'm kind of positive everyone would have their hand raised at some point during those questions. Caregivers are definitely a valuable and essential resource in our healthcare system. Yet caregivers are often underappreciated, overlooked, and somewhat invisible during patient-provider visits. So the combination of having so many roles, of taking care of so many responsibilities, can have an impact and create what is called caregiver burden. So let's talk a little bit about the multiple roles that caregivers have, and I'm sure many of you on this call can identify or could probably give me a few others that I won't mention. Caregivers provide companionship, emotional support, interact with physicians and other healthcare providers about their patient care needs, about services. They do housework while providing personal care to their loved ones. And when needed, they assist with complex tasks such as tube feedings and monitoring medication adherence and regimens. In addition, caregivers are often asked to coordinate services from multiple health and human service agencies to make difficult decisions about service needs. These agencies often have different guidelines or eligibility criteria, which makes it quite difficult for a caregiver to determine how to access needed services. So it's no surprise that caregiving significantly affects caregivers' health and well-being. Family caregiver or caregiving has been associated with increased levels of depression and anxiety, higher use of psychotropic medications, poor self-reported physical health, and even compromised immune function. So I'm sure many of you have read about these or have even experienced them, but I also want to spend a moment to talk about the rewards of caregiving. Caregivers have shared with me that they have formed closer relationships with others, including partners and children. They have a greater appreciation of life. It's helped them, being a caregiver has helped them clarify life's priorities. Others have reported that it's increased their own faith. And the majority of the caregivers that I've spoken to have said, I now have more empathy for others and what they're going through. So I'll share some tips for dealing with these barriers. But before addressing caregiver self-care, I'd like to say a few words about managing the holidays, friends, and others within the current concerns of what I'm going to call the big three, the seasonal flu, the respiratory syncytial virus, or RSV, and COVID. We know now, based on anecdotal reports as well as established research, that caregivers face tremendous stresses during the COVID-19 pandemic. There is quite a bit of information addressing the value of having cancer patients follow vaccination guidelines or recommendations. Sadly, the effects of these conditions on the caregiver's health are often overlooked. These cumulative effects of taking care of a loved one diagnosed with cancer and with one of these conditions can have like a double whammy negative effect on the physical, emotional, and immunological health of the caregiver. When a caregiver becomes ill with one of these conditions, there is then additional pressure on the caregiver, the patient, and the rest of the family. When caregivers neglect their own health care needs, such as going and getting the vaccinations, there may be a sense of increased vulnerability. So here are a few tips that may help the caregivers and their families deal with these episodes or situations. First, speak to your healthcare providers about following your vaccination and other preventive healthcare practices. Our cancer patients usually have someone monitoring them, or someone on the healthcare team is watching all of that. But caregivers don't have that same monitoring benefit. So caregivers must understand that by participating in self-care, they're also taking care of their loved ones with cancer. So practicing caution by having all these preventive measures will help special occasions take place with minimal worries about exposure to these diseases or conditions. When and if possible, take advantage of telehealth visits, and Dr. Adriozola gave an excellent presentation on that. These type of visits facilitate greater access to providers for patients and caregivers. Telehealth visits and teleconferences reduce transportation needs, they minimize physical contact with others, and occur within a more comfortable environment. I think the biggest barrier that I've heard reported by family members and the caregivers is learning how to use all the what they call the techie stuff. So it would be good to make sure that patients and caregivers know how to use these tools and feel comfortable using the tools. So let's move on to our next topic, the role of a caregiver during special occasions, such as holidays or vacations. Living with cancer during the holidays creates a unique experience for families. I'm sure that many of you on this call experienced surprises, challenges, solutions, and rewards during the recent holidays, and some of these may have contributed to uncertainty about care or called for new information. In the following moment, I'll cover some strategies that may help manage the chaos associated with these occasions. One helpful strategy is to develop a special occasion preparedness plan. Those of you living by water, like we do here in the Texas coast, know what a hurricane preparedness plan is. Well, it would be very similar to the hurricane preparedness plan. A special occasion plan would map out the details of how to prepare for those special events. The plan would also give some opportunities for the caregiver to make trade-offs in their roles, especially when they're having anniversaries, birthdays, and other holidays like we experience. Second thing to remember is to be realistic about what can and cannot be done. So create a stable and realistic plan, especially if you're a long-distance caregiver. It'll help tremendously. And I'll elaborate on long-distance caregiving in a moment. Be flexible about traditions and customs associated with holidays or family gatherings. If your home was the usual hub for all the activities, it may be time now to make changes. You can ask another family member to host the event. Or if you still are determined to have it in your home, you can be flexible about the number of guests you invite. Perhaps invite fewer guests. It won't be so tiring for you or for your loved one. And it'll also set up an environment for better one-to-one conversations. You can create new traditions, like prepare video clips of past holidays. That way, these clips provide a snapshot of past memories, and they can also then be shared with your loved ones. So it is a good time to establish new traditions. It also may be a time when traveling is difficult. So it's good to think about incorporating all these social media tools that we have into these events. You can use Zoom, Skype, website, or FaceTime to be present at an event. So that way, you and your loved one will still be a part of all the festivities. When travel is possible, here's a few tips to consider. Give your healthcare team notice that you will be traveling. Let them know for how long and in what region. For example, is it domestic or international travel? Ask them to help you identify critical tasks that must be followed, and if needed, suggest alternative methods for dealing with some of these tasks. For those of you who have pets and they're not going to travel with you, let your veterinarian know about your travel and set up a boarding plan for your first baby. Be sure and give the vet and the facility your contact information in case of emergencies. This is very important throughout the holidays and really on a day-to-day basis for all of our cancer patients as well as our patients. Be vigilant about your medications so you can follow the prescribed regimens and schedules as you need to. Keep a schedule of when refills are due. This is very important and helps minimize the risk of being in another state or country and running out of medications. Keep a list of all your medications, their dosages, time to be taken, and how to be taken. Store this information in a place that is easily accessible. You can do it on your smartphone or you can do it on an index card, whichever your preference is. Remember to write down the names and contact information of the physicians and the pharmacists, but particularly for the physicians prescribing the medication and particularly for the pharmacy where the medicines are obtained. And be sure and include emergency information for the provider and for the pharmacy. Some patients have shared with me and caregivers have shared that they asked their physician to write a letter stating that he or she has prescribed the following medications, and then they have the list of the medications. If you do that, you can make copies of the letter and then give them to family members and friends or even providers when you know you're going to be traveling. It's helpful to keep on communicating with your pharmacist. Ask about the policies regarding refills if you lose your meds or run out of pills or medications while out of town. When flying, I would recommend keeping your medications in a small carry-on bag. That way you have all your medications with you. You may also choose to keep them in a prescription container or their original bottles. You may wish to keep your meds in the original container, though, because sometimes our TSA folks are going to wonder what all of these medications may be. So that's when the letter from your physician comes in handy. So keep the letter in the bag with your meds and show it to the folks when you need to. I would recommend always having a ready-to-go bag packed. That way you can include necessary medical supplies, extra clothing, copies of essential documents, such as copies of prescriptions, contact numbers, and members of your family team. So now I'd like to say just a few words about long-distance caregiving. Long-distance caregiving introduces additional challenges. Who is a long-distance caregiver? Is it a family friend or a family member living an hour or more away from your loved one who needs care? When you don't live close by, it may take more effort to find out what's happening and to stay updated with your loved one's needs. So being a long-distance caregiver introduces additional challenges. So here are a few strategies that you may be able to use. Create a list of significant phone numbers and email addresses. Keep it in a shared document or a spreadsheet and update it on a regular basis. With permission, attend the person's telehealth visits or teleconferences. Telehealth visits, as you heard, are very important and can help with communication. Stay in contact with the primary caregiver of your loved one by phone or email, even if you just listen to them and don't do anything. Listening is doing something. It may not sound like much, but it means a lot to the caregiver. If possible, travel to stay with your loved ones for a few days. And if you go, it's important to make the most of your time with your loved ones. So when you arrive at your home of your loved one, you can also do some practical things, like you can assess the personal hygiene of your loved one, the level of activity and mobility, whether or not there are groceries in the pantry and refrigerator. You can check the home's condition. Is it clean and well organized? You can also make sure the house is safe. For example, removing all fall hazards, make sure that there's working smoke detectors, and checking for secure door locks. You may even consider giving a trusted neighbor a key to the house. So it may seem that the caregiver is always present, or prepared, for the patient's needs, but often forgets about their own health care needs. So remind yourself that you as a caregiver and the person you care for will reap the benefits of being a healthy caregiver, even when it means being across freeways or mountains or oceans. So what else can you do to get the support that you need as a caregiver? Well, one thing you can do is assess your circle of support. If needed, widen that circle. Ask neighbors, people from your place of worship, or even local community centers for help. One caregiver even asked the Girl Scouts one of their nieces was in, and they had people coming by and helping with that. Never forget, people like to help, and if given a chance to help, most likely they'll say yes. And this will expand the circle of caregivers and also help the patient or your loved care one be able to communicate with other folks. Finally, and most important, keep tabs on your physical and mental health. Remember, caregiver burden stems from ignoring physical symptoms such as fatigue, interrupted sleep, weight gain or loss, or even increased colds and infections. Be on the lookout for emotional support such as frustration, anxiety, or sadness. Don't ignore these signs. They are red flags, just like a temperature of 104 or a blood pressure of 180 or over 100. If the symptoms are ignored for a long period of time, it can increase the risk of caregiving burden. It's critical to practice self-care for your body and mind. You can set boundaries for your family, friends, and yourself. For example, don't be hesitant to say no when you need to. You don't have to answer the phone or consistently check emails. You can take a break from all that. Permit yourself to listen to your feelings. Crying, grieving, and sadness can clear your mind and provide relief. Express emotions such as joy, gratitude, love, and laughter. All these things can strengthen your journey. There are evidence-based studies that really prove that some of these techniques that I'm going to mention work. So it's not just based on pop psychology, okay? So sleep well. Establish a sleep ritual to help cue your body its time to rest. Take breaks. You can try meditation, yoga, or deep breathing. For example, there's a simple hand breathing exercise called five-finger breathing. And I'd like to ask all of you to maybe participate in this with me. Now hold out your hand, either hand, and trace each finger with the other hand. Inhale as you go up one side. And then exhale as your fingers go down the other side. So this is a simple exercise. We did it during this call. This type of exercise can be done indoors and outdoors, and evidence shows that they help decrease anxiety and stress. Try journaling, nothing fancy. You can just jot down your thoughts or feelings. You can begin with a gratitude journal. Jot down positive moments that occurred during your days, and these notes will be available to read again when the blues come around. Reach out to others. Join a support group, whether it's in person or online. And our speakers in a moment will address these resources. Be mindful of all your senses. Use your, the senses of seeing, touching, smelling, hearing, and tasting. Move your body around. It matters. Some activity can help your mood, your productivity, and energy level. Take time for yourself. Do a nature walk. Even 10 minutes would be helpful on these times. So this is a lot of information that you've been given in a short period of time, and I hope that some of it resonated with you and that you'll be able to get some self-care for your own body and mind. So thank you very much for your time. And Dr. Messner, this concludes my remarks.
I want to thank you so much for that presentation and just a stellar presentation. I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. So I just want to thank you so much for that. Just really outstanding presentation. And I'm just going to take one moment to just. And our next speaker is Dr. Guadalupe Palos, and Dr. Palos is former Clinical Protocol Administration Manager, Office of Cancer Survivorship, University of Texas, MD Anderson Cancer Center, author and researcher in health care disparities, caregiver, and survivorship. And Dr. Palos will be addressing stresses, challenges, and rewards of caregiving, managing family, friends, partners, and traditions in the context of COVID, seasonal flu, and RSV, long-distance caregiving, remembering to take care of yourself, and stress management tips. It's my pleasure now to turn this program over to my esteemed colleague, Dr. Palos.
Dr. Messner, thank you for the invitation to join this esteemed panel on caring for a loved one diagnosed with bladder cancer. Dr. Adriozola established a solid foundation for including caregivers in conversations about their loved one's care. She also provided a valuable update on bladder cancer and the use of telemedicine. I'll follow her excellent presentation by focusing on the stresses and challenges associated with caregiving. Then I'll briefly talk about managing friends or family members during special occasions. And I'll end by sharing some self-care and stress management tips for caregivers, including our long-distance caregivers. Whether the role occurs gradually or unexpectedly, providing care for a family member is a challenging job that can be overwhelming, particularly for those who still must work, maintain a household, care for other family members, and at times even have their own health care needs. With thoughtful planning, a strong support system, and a realistic understanding of the role, family caregivers can give their loved ones the help they need without sacrificing their health. Nearly everyone becomes an unpaid caregiver at some point in their life, and some individuals stay in this role over extended periods of time, lasting months and sometimes years. Providing care to an individual with a chronic illness is generally viewed as a significant life stressor, and its effects on the well-being of the caregiver have been extensively studied over the last four decades. So there's no doubt that caregivers continue to be a valuable and essential role in our healthcare system. Yet caregivers are often underappreciated, overlooked, and somewhat invisible during patient-provider visits. So, and the combination of these factors can then contribute to caregiver burden. So caregivers, one of the things that we know is that caregivers have multiple roles, which change over the trajectory of the cancer experience. Caregivers provide companionship and emotional support. They interact with physicians and other healthcare providers about the patient care needs. They assist with complex tasks such as tube feedings and monitoring medication adherence and regimens. Caregivers are also called on to coordinate services from multiple health and human service agencies to make difficult decisions about service needs. These agencies often have different guidelines or eligibility criteria, making it difficult for a caregiver to determine how to access the services that are needed. Now, I just named a few of the caregiving responsibilities and roles, and I know that there are plenty, but we don't have the time to list every one of them. But again, there are multiple roles and complex roles. So with all of this, it's no surprise that caregiving significantly affects the caregiver's health and well-being. So family caregiving has been associated with increased levels of depression and anxiety. There's been higher use of psychotropic medications, poor self-reported physical health, and compromised immune function. Caregivers also report, though, that there are rewards. Examples of rewards that caregivers have shared with me has been having closer relationships with others, including their partners and children, having a greater appreciation of life, clarifying their life's priorities, increasing one's faith, and having more empathy for others. I'll share some tips for addressing these barriers, but before addressing caregiver self-care, I would like to say a few words about managing the holidays, friends, and others within the context of COVID, or what I'm calling the big three: seasonal flu, respiratory syncytial virus, and COVID. It has been well recognized by research and anecdotal stories that cancer caregivers face tremendous stresses during the COVID-19 pandemic. There's quite a bit of information addressing the value of having cancer patients follow guidelines or recommendations for vaccination. Sadly, the effects of these conditions on the caregiver health needs are often overlooked. The cumulative effects of taking care of a loved one diagnosed with cancer and having one of these conditions can have like a triple whammy effect on the physical, emotional, and immunological health of a caregiver. When a caregiver becomes ill with one of these conditions, there is additional pressure on the caregiver, the patient, and the rest of the family. When caregivers neglect their own health care needs, there also may be a sense of increased vulnerability. So here's a few tips that you can look at to perhaps help you prepare for the occurrence of one of these conditions. Speak to your health care providers about your vaccination and other health care practices. Caregivers have to understand by participating in self-care, they're also taking care of their loved ones. When and if possible, take advantage of telehealth visits. These types of visits facilitates greater access to providers for patients and caregivers. They also have advantages of reducing transportation, minimizing physical contact with others, and occurring within a more comfortable environment. So let's talk about our next topic, the role of a caregiver during special occasions such as holidays or vacations. Living with cancer during the holidays creates a unique experience for families. I'm sure many of you on this call experienced surprises, challenges, solutions, and rewards during the recent holidays. And some of these may have contributed to uncertainty about care or called for new information. So in the following moments, I'll share a few strategies that may help manage the chaos associated with these occasions. One helpful strategy is to develop a special occasion preparedness plan. Now, many of you have heard of a hurricane preparedness plan. Well, this is very similar. It maps out the details of how to prepare for those special events. The other thing that's really important is to be realistic about what can and cannot be done. For example, if you're a long-distance caregiver, create a stable and realistic plan. And I'll talk a little bit more about long-distance caregiving in a moment. Be flexible about your traditions and customs associated with holidays or family gatherings. For example, if your house was the hub for activities, well, this may be the time to make some changes in those traditions. You can have other people take care of that for you and have it hosted at their place. If you are determined to have it in your home, you can invite fewer guests, or you can create, like I mentioned, new traditions, such as preparing video clips of past holidays. Those will be shared with other family members across the geographic regions. If travel is difficult, you can incorporate social media tools such as Zoom, Skype, WebEx, or FaceTime. And when travel is possible, here are some things that will be helpful for you to be thinking about. Give your entire healthcare team notice that you'll be traveling and for how long and in what region. Is it domestic or international travel? If you have pets that will not travel with you, let your veterinarian know about your travel and set up your boarding plan for your fur baby. Give the vet and facility your contact information in case of emergencies. Be vigilant about your medication. This is very important, so you can follow the prescribed regimen or schedule. So it would be helpful to keep a schedule of when refills are due. This is especially important and minimizes the risk of being in another state or country and running out of medications. Of course, keep a list of all your medications, their dosages, time to be taken, and how to be taken. Remember to write down the names and contacts of physicians and pharmacists and pharmacies of where the medications are obtained and include emergency information for each provider and pharmacy. When flying, keep your medications in a small carry-on bag with all the medicine. You may choose to keep them in the prescription container or in their original bottles. Try to always have a ready-to-go bag packed. It can include medical supplies, extra clothing, copies of essential documents such as copies of your prescriptions, contact numbers of your healthcare providers, and members of your family team. So now I'll talk a little bit about long-distance caregiving. This type of caregiving introduces additional challenges. When you don't live close by, it may take more effort to find out what's happening and also to stay updated with your loved one's needs. Here are a few strategies for those of you who are long distance caregivers. Keep a list of significant phone numbers and email addresses. With permission, attend the person's telehealth and teleconference visits. And it's also helpful to stay in contact with the primary caregiver by phone or email. You may not be able to do tangible tasks, but even listening will be helpful to the primary caregiver. If it's possible, travel to stay with your loved ones for a few days. It would allow the individual caring for your loved one time for a mini vacation. And it's important to make the most of your time with your loved one. But you can also do some tangible types of tasks like look at the house, assess the environment. Is the house clean and well organized? Look at the level of activity, mobility, and personal hygiene of your loved one. Look at their nutritional needs. Are there groceries in the pantry or the refrigerator? Make sure the house is safe. For example, remove all falling hazards, determine if the smoke detectors work, and check for secure door locks. You may even consider giving a trusted neighbor a key to the house. Remind yourself that you as a caregiver and the person you care for will reap the benefits of a healthy caregiver. So even though you are always ready to take care of your patients, it's also necessary to take care of yourself. Many caregivers have asked, how can I involve other family members, friends, and neighbors in this caregiving experience? Well, first you can assess your circle of support. If needed, widen that circle by asking neighbors, people from your place of worship or work, or even from local community centers. Identify the roles of each family member or friend who wishes to be a part of the team. Never forget, people like to help, and if given a chance, most likely they'll say yes. This expanded network of caregivers helps you and the caregiver to lessen the caregiver burden. Finally, and most important, keep tabs on your physical and mental health. Remember, caregiver burden stems from ignoring physical symptoms such as fatigue, interrupted sleep, weight gain or loss, or even increased COVID infections. Be on the lookout for emotional symptoms such as anger, frustration, anxiety, or sadness. These symptoms fluctuate depending on the status of your loved ones throughout their experience. Do not ignore these signs. They're red flags, just like a temperature of 104 degrees or a blood pressure of 180 over 100. If these symptoms are ignored for a long period of time, it can increase the risk of caregiver burden. These conditions can also then lead to other types of problems or abuse of alcohol or other substances. It's critical to practice self-care for your body and mind. Set boundaries for your family, friends, and yourself. Permit yourself to listen to your feelings, even if it's crying, grieving, and sadness. Look into emotions and express emotions such as joy, gratitude, love, and laughter. And then it's also important to do some self-care strategies such as sleeping well, taking breaks. You can try journaling, reaching out to others by joining a support group, and we'll hear more about that in a moment. And being mindful of all your senses, your ability to touch, to see, to smell, to hear, and to taste. It's also important to move your body. You can even an activity of 10 minutes can be helpful. So, and when needed, please do not hesitate to seek professional help for mental health services, such as those that will be discussed in a moment. So to be consistent, I would like to suggest that you create a mantra or a positive affirmation that a healthy caregiver also contributes to a healthy patient. Thank you for allowing me to share these thoughts with you. If you have some tips that you think may help cope with the caregiver journey, take a moment to share them. Dr. Messner, this concludes my remarks, and I'll return the program back to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Palos. That was just a wonderful presentation. Very invaluable to our participants, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. We're now going to move on to, I'm going to say a few words about cancer care services. Cancer Care is partnering today with the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network. It's just a wonderful resource for all of you to utilize and take advantage of. We will be sending you information about the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network when you receive the SurveyMonkey evaluation at the end of the program. Well, you'll get it in a couple of days after the program. I'm just going to say a few words about Cancer Care's free programs and services. You may contact Cancer Care by calling our Hope Line at 800-813-4673 or visiting our website, www.cancercare.org. We have a number of services. Many people call our Hope Line, and on the Hope Line, you'll speak to an oncology social worker, and the oncology social worker will be providing information about all the services that we provide. They're all free services, both practical and financial assistance, counseling, online support groups, coping circles, educational programs like this one, and also a number of publications and fact sheets. So that's a service that we offer. And then I'm going to have Ms. Rios speak to you about the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network, which is a wonderful resource for all of you. Ms. Rios?
Dr. Messner, for the introduction into cancer care, for putting together this important program. Yes, my name is Patricia Rios, Senior Education and Advocacy Manager for the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network, also known as Beacon. I am thrilled to be here today to talk about Beacon and the free resources we have for patients and caregivers. For those of you who are not familiar with Beacon, we are a community of patients, caregivers, survivors, advocates, medical and research professionals, united in support of people impacted by bladder cancer. Our mission is to provide educational and support services for the bladder cancer community. So no matter the diagnosis or treatment journey, we aim to have the right resources available, from information about clinical trials, webinars, printed materials, a designated podcast, or understanding treatment options. All of that can be found at bcan.org, 24/7, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's bca.org, our website. One of our materials that I would like to point out is our Tips for Caregivers Handbook, which is available for download at our website. And you can also request a print copy directly. The handbook provides helpful tools and tips that most caregivers wish they knew when their loved one was first diagnosed with bladder cancer. On our website, you will also find a listing of various bladder cancer support groups, such as our monthly female focus virtual support group, which meets on the first Tuesday of the month. Now, if you're looking to speak to someone who has gone through a similar experience, our Survivor to Survivor program matches newly diagnosed bladder cancer patients and caregivers with trained volunteers who share insights about their own experience with bladder cancer. Last year, we partnered with Cancer Care to launch a toll-free support line for bladder cancer patients and caregivers. The support line is staffed by oncology social workers from Cancer Care who can help with emotional, practical, and information needs. To access the support line, you can dial 833-275-4222. The support line is staffed Monday through Thursday between 10 a.m. and 6 p.m. Eastern Time, and Friday between 10 a.m. and 5 p.m. Eastern Time. Again, the number for the support line is 833-275-4222. Lastly, I just want to mention that May is Bladder Cancer Awareness Month, and we encourage everyone who's listening today to get involved by joining Beacon at one of our 15-plus walk U.S. locations. To find a location near you, log on to our website at bca.org. And now I will turn it back to Dr. Messner.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Gios. It's a wonderful organization, and we have a wonderful partnership with Beacon, and we really, if you aren't using the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network, please do. It's a wonderful resource. And now we're going to move right on to the Q&A. And I'm going to ask Regina to bring all of our speakers on board. I'm going to try to take as many of your questions as possible. Regina?
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we'll take questions from the web only, and you may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
My husband is in remission after receiving treatment. This is for Dr. Adriazola. My husband is in remission after receiving treatment for stage 2 bladder cancer, but he's worried about it coming back. How can I, as his caregiver, try to alleviate any fears about recurrence? Do you recommend any resources?
Hi. That's a great question, and I think it just goes to, you know, the fear of uncertainty when you just don't know. I think the best thing you can do is just reassurance, and I think Beacons is an amazing resource. I actually do refer a lot of patients to that support for their support groups and the webinars and things like that. You know, just reassuring and keeping up with like surveillance schedules, those cystoscopies or scans that they may have, you know, the further out from the time that he was cured, either by surgery, radiation or whatnot, the further away you get from that, the more reassurance I think you can get that this is really truly gone. But yeah.
Excellent. Thank you. And another question, actually, My husband was recently diagnosed with stage one bladder cancer, stage two bladder cancer, and will start treatment soon. It's just us and the idea of taking care of him while dealing with work and our home is way too much. Do you have any recommendations for reaching out to my community to work at work or even our neighborhood? I need help with little things like shopping, but I'm a little embarrassed to ask. Oh, Dr. Odrizola, if you could address that.
Oh, so sorry. I think there's many more people that are really sensitive and, willing to help out than we think. So many times, we have, patients that tell us about little things, like a neighbor, notice that they're a lot more often and they start asking questions. So I think just by being as open as you can be, I know some people do post on social media or, looking to support groups for guidance. I feel like I don't have the best answer aside from kind of putting yourself out there and knowing that there are people that probably have gone through the same things that you have gone through and are very sympathetic to that. I know there's some people that are willing to do meal deliveries maybe a couple times a week. Or even setting up things like Uber or Lyft to get to appointments, things like that. But, it is hard. I sympathize. It's hard, especially when if someone's a very private person, to kind of put your thoughts and your plight out there. But there are a lot of people that are willing to help out. The hardest part is, asking.
Thank you. And thank you so much, Dr. Zola. And our next question is for Dr. Palos. Dr. Palos, what are some ways I can find respite care for myself? Are there any programs that you would recommend?
That's a great question. Of course, caregivers need some respite time for themselves. What you can do, I'd like to suggest a couple of things. One is reach out to any of the faith-based organizations around your neighborhood. You don't necessarily have to be a member, but there are groups that will come out and help. For example, there's college students that want to get extra credit, and they'll come out and help, stay with your loved one for a bit. High school students also are asked to do community service projects before they graduate. So that's another thing that you can do is reach out to the high school and find out if there are folks that would be interested in that. You can also, there are so many programs that can give you resources. Cancer Care, the American Cancer Society, the foundation that Ms. Rios was talking about, the organization, and I'm sorry I'm having a moment here where I can't remember the whole name, but the Bladder Cancer Organization. So you can talk to these folks, and they can pinpoint what's there from a national level, what's there that are online services where you can get your actual person-to-person services. The other thing that is helpful that I've noticed people taking advantage of, I don't know how many of you are familiar with Nextdoor, the Nextdoor app. I've seen many, many people asking for help, whether they're going through chemotherapy or just a hard time with their children. People respond. I've been astounded by how quickly people respond. The same thing with Facebook. I've seen people post things there saying, I need help with XYZ, and people will respond to that. Of course, you have to be careful and take precautions when you're doing that. But those are some ways that are a little different. I do want to encourage you, though, to reach out. And I would really start with some of our organizations that you can call in that have hotlines, and they can give you some information that way. I hope that helps.
Oh, excellent. Superb. And actually, it's a question related to that. So So this is for Dr. Pavlos as well. My mother is on the road to recovery post-treatment and is now in remission. She says she doesn't need me to stay with her any longer as I moved in after she was diagnosed. I'm not so sure I trust her now. How can we discuss potentially leaving my caregiver position and having my mother be on her own?
Oh, that's a sticky situation, isn't it? Of course, you're nervous about leaving your mom alone because you don't know what might happen. And I can understand that most likely your mom is ready to go back to her normal routine and get her independence back. So that may be some of the reason that she's saying, I'm okay, go home. You know, the best thing to do is just to sit down and talk about what are her feelings. Does she feel that she's imposing on you and on your time? Does she really want to just be independent and have some me time in her home the way she had before? You know, routine is very important for people. And routine can sometimes just mean being alone and having, you know, your own schedule to do the things that you want to do. So that's one thing you can do. The second thing to do is if you do decide to go and move back to your home, then make a list or prepare a plan. Remember we talked about that special occasion plan? Well, this could be the time that you can sit down and say, okay, Mom, I'll go home and I'll do it on a trial basis, but this is what we need to have. We need to have emergency numbers for this. I need to make sure that somebody nearby has a key to your home, that someone you trust. You know, so you can go through that. And I believe the discussions that we're having today are going to be available to our callers. So you'll have some of this information that we presented available to you. It is normal. You know, one of the things that I have heard our cancer patients say over and over and over again, I have no control over this disease. So if they, you know, once you get told, hey, you know, you're in remission, you can go live a normal life, whatever a normal life is, people are ready to go back to their normal routine. People are ready to just move on to the next stage of their lives. So those are very common feelings. And so don't take it personal. Just sit down with your mom and talk this through. And if you feel that it's going to get uncomfortable, you might ask another family member or someone else to be a mediator between you and your mom as you make these decisions.
Thank you so much. And Ms. Rios, do you want to comment as well?
Yeah, I just wanted to add that, you know, really want to encourage those who are listening to visit our website. We have a lot of resources for caregivers as well as for the loved ones to help them navigate, including reading stories that may be inspirational and might give you that that extra boost that you need as you navigate the different challenges. So know that there are resources available. If there's assistance you need and finding something, we're available to answer the questions. But I think what I want our caregivers to know is that, you know, there's resources for you available, and you are part of the team.
Oh, thank you so much, Ms. Rios. And now we're going to ask all of our speakers just to give a 1 minute takeaway to everyone. And so I'm going to start with Dr. Audrey Zola first.
Yeah.
Just a 1 minute takeaway.
Sorry, I didn't catch that.
Oh, just to give a 1 minute takeaway, would you like people to take away from today's program?
Oh, yeah. You know, there's, like, at the very beginning of diagnosis, there's so much that, you know, goes through people's minds, but I firmly believe writing things down is the best way to kind of keep things in order and really knowing why you're here to help your loved one out, and constant reassurance to say that, hey, I'm here with you. We're doing this together, so let's move forward.
Excellent. Thank you so much. And Dr. Pavlos?
Oh, I think I'd like to remind folks to practice self-care in body and in mind. And, you know, it's important to strive to maintain and sustain self-care practices. Don't feel guilty about it. You have to take care of yourself in order to be a healthy caregiver for your loved ones, and probably if you have family, then for your family. I would like to just share a statement that I found on an online website. It said that caregivers are warriors. They're fearless. They're courageous. They're passionate about, protecting those that they care for. Well, I'd like to encourage caregivers to use that same fearlessness, courageousness, and passion to take care of their own body and mind, and to be sure that they can protect themselves while they protect their loved ones.
Oh, thank you so much, Dr. Paulus. That's really quite inspiring. Thank you. Ms. Rios.
Yeah, I love what Dr. Paulo said, and I can't stress self-care enough. As a caregiver, our energy, our focus on the loved one. But, I think to the extent that we can care of others, as we have to be equally healthy and strong to care for others, so to keep that top of mind. And to not feel guilty for spending that time for yourself.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Thank you. This has been an extraordinary program. I have to thank our speakers who've been phenomenal. I also want to thank our participants who really asked such great questions. The synchrony between everybody together. Although we have done this program before, this was an extraordinary program, and I want to thank everyone for your participation. I also want to comment on the fact that we couldn't take everyone's question. So for those of you who asked a question, for those of you who have a question yet to ask, and for those of you who have a question that you're thinking about, please go back to Treating Healthcare Team. They know you the best, and they can really ask them the questions that you asked. If you asked a question, ask them the questions that you have in mind, and ask your questions over and over again. Because your healthcare team consists of many different disciplines. Of course, your oncologist, and then the oncology nurse, oncology social worker, patient navigator, financial navigator, there's a whole team of people. So that no matter what question you ask, there's a team of people who can help you with your concerns. And also, please do contact, of course, the Bladder Cancer Advocacy Network, and Cancer Care. Lots of resources there for you as well. Most importantly, we would not want anyone to feel you're alone in coping with bladder cancer or any type of cancer. We want you to now know that you're part of the community of support, and we are here to help you. And also, please know that it's important to know who is on call on evenings, weekends, and holidays, because those seem to be the time when people have the most questions and concerns that come up. And so always check with your healthcare team as to who is available. Again, I want to thank you all for your participation today, and I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you all.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone have a great day.